Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 11, 2014 edition of Commodity Week. United States Department of Agriculture released its July World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, and did it hold surprises? You bet. We'll talk more about those today during this edition of Commodity Week. Our special guest today is Brian Basting of Advanced Trading out of Bloomington, Illinois. Our panelists include Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Mike Zuzolo from Global Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's begin our discussion with this question, and it is not about the United States Department of Agriculture reports from Friday morning, but rather about crop conditions in each of your areas. Aaron Curtis, we'll start with you. When we talked on Friday afternoon with Ben Pruce of the Andersons out of Estherville, Iowa, he tells us they're about 10 days out from tasseling there, and that their condition looks really good. He says he hasn't seen green corn like this in 4 years. Surprised me, I think, just a bit, because we were thinking rainfall in that area might have had a serious impact on their corn crop. They are the wettest place in the state of Iowa. What do conditions look like in Bloomington, Illinois?
Very good. I don't know if they could look a whole lot better, Todd. I just driving around Bloomington, even down to Decatur and back this week. You couldn't hardly find any issues at all. There were a couple little wet spots, but those were few and far between. Nice dark green color, very good stands, a lot of corn out in the field, and really some pretty good potential. Soybean-wise, things starting to look a lot better over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Of course, the wet weather early, the cool temperatures weren't doing a lot for soybeans, but that's kind of trend has changed here a little bit, and soybeans even growing pretty well. So all our elevator customers here in Central Illinois, their reports from their farmers are just about the best they've ever seen it, if not the best.
Bill Gentry, when we move into Indiana near Lafayette, what do you find?
Right by us, right where I live up north of Lafayette, we got a little waterlogged early. We've seen some areas that are nutrient deficient and some nitrogen loss, but it's greened up nicely. It looks a lot better now than it did. Down towards Lafayette, I'd say, 80% of the corn's probably tasseling now. Have started to see some brown silks, but we're far from getting totally pollinated. And then moving south, I think some of the guys are a little drier than they would like to be. They've missed some of the rains or had lighter precip than we did up north, and they're seeing just a little bit of stress in pockets. But all in all, it probably looks like one of the best crops we've seen in several years.
And Mike Zuzolo, you are in Atchison, Kansas. I think about a three-hour drive from Hannibal, Quincy area straight to the west. And on the other side of the line from St. Joe, Missouri, how do things look there?
Well, USDA came out this past Monday and took corn conditions up 3% in Kansas, Todd, to 58% good to excellent. They took the beans up 1% to 62% good to excellent. It just shows you how bad of a year we had last year. So I think those numbers are right on from what I've seen in eastern Kansas and western Missouri. We did get a really strong storm about 4 or 5 days ago. A couple tornadoes came through, and I think that actually that same system extended all the way into Illinois and got into Morris and Earlville, because I talked to some clients after that, and that same system was moving pretty rapidly across that part of the Corn Belt. So we did have some damage. We've got a lot of lodging on some really tall corn, and I think probably the beans are showing a bit of a stress. Even with that rain we had about a week ago, the corn has not shown any stress all year long. The beans are starting to show a little bit of stress in parts of uh, in parts of western Missouri in particular.
Aaron, the United States Department of Agriculture chose to relieve the national average yield the same, which isn't terribly surprising, at 165.3 bushels to the acre, but the trade is probably above that. For carryout for the end of the 14-15 year, they have a 1.8 billion bushel carryout. Where do you think those two numbers really might be?
Well, I think they grow a little bit from here. We'll see what happens in August, but like you said, no big surprise that we didn't raise the yield here this morning. Really haven't done that since 2003, at least raise it in June or July, so no real big surprise there. I'm looking for something around 168 or so, probably in the August number when we see that, assuming that the crop conditions continue to hang in there, weather continues to cooperate as it has done so far, and I would expect ending stocks to grow a little bit, but not too much more here. I think this 1.8 number, 50 million bushels on either side of that, is kind of where I see it here as we head into the fall, Todd.
That would give us about a 2.0 or a 2.1 billion bushel carryout, I think. Is that roughly where you think the trade is working those numbers, Bill Gentry?
Yeah, I think realistically that's a possibility. I can't really hear Aaron while he's talking, but you know, a 170 bushel national average yield is still fundamentally possible. I think the only thing that would really detract from that going forward is the nutrient deficiencies that we've seen, because earlier on 35% of the corn belt was overly wet, and that probably leached some of the nitrogen and other nutrients out of the soil, so that could come back to be an issue. And the other one would be just to happen to have like a 3-week drought going through August where we really kind of singe the crop back and force it to maturity a little faster than we would like. But in the broad strokes, you know, I like the 1.8, possibly a 2 billion bushel figure. But in the long-term scheme of things, I think what that'll do is push your prices down, stimulate demand, and especially when you look at China that's been selling corn out of their strategic reserve at the high 8s or low 9s, they're going to have to come back and rethink. If the U.S. corn's down at 350, why pay that margin if they can get it cheaper somewhere else?
Soybeans now. Let's turn your attention there. Mike Zuzulo, 415 million bushels is the new projected carryout for the 14-15 crop year. That would be the new crop soybeans. Is this in line with what you were thinking?
Yeah, it wasn't far. My estimate was around 460, I think, Todd, right around that area, 460 or 469. I don't have any arguments with USDA at this stage of the game, except, you know, how did they find all those acres between March and June? But you've got to let that one go. I think probably going forward here, as we talked about on the closing market report, it's, I think, going to be hard to push above 45.2 on national yield without some excellent weather here the next 20 days, because I continue to get across the spectrum from west to east. Ohio client called me today and said, I'm not real happy with the beans. Guys north of me are just now trying to plant for the first time. So I think it's going to be really tough to get above 45.2 on a national yield level in the soybeans. And kind of complementing what Bill talked about in the corn market, you know what Friday's report did in both wheat and corn, it took supplies up and it took demand down. And unfortunately, I think the trade is buying into that instead of bigger supplies encouraging demand, the bigger supplies are actually hurting demand because of the competition. And this is where I think the wheat market and the sentiment in the wheat market really has to change to help the corn market as well.
I'd like to hear from you, each of you, at this point, what's left to protect from the downside, reminding you that the average farm price for corn and soybeans was dropped either 25 cents on each end for soybeans, and it now ranges from, what, $9.50 to $11.50 for the national average farm price or cash price for the marketing year. And for corn, it was dropped 20 cents, and now from $3.65 to $4.35. What's left to protect? We'll start with you, Aaron Curtis.
Well, there's some concern here with how much more downside we have with the fund position on corn still showing a little bit of a long position. I guess that would concern me a little bit. If we had dropped this $1.35 since the 1st of May, and we're looking at a fairly large short position for the funds, then I guess I may be more confident in saying that we're due for some sort of a bounce in here. Now, technically, we're extremely oversold, so bounces are possible here, but I think they're still going to be met with some selling as opposed to the opposite there. So, you know, with this fund position still the way it is, I got some concerns that we could continue to drift lower here without some, weather changes or some sort of event that causes some sort of a rally. But if the weather continues to cooperate here through the latter part of July, I think we continue to leak lower. And, you know, December corn around 375, in that 350 to 375 range is where we might try to catch some support, Todd.
Well, Brian Bastien, I think we'll ask you this same question too, but let's move on to Mike Zuzulo. So, Mike, Aaron says 350 to 375, need to protect something or think about that in terms of new crop corn. What are you thinking?
I you know, 507 is where lead month wheat support is, Todd. That's the top end of the second quarter of 2010. I'm going to answer you in an indirect fashion and say as soon as the wheat bottom, the corn is there. As far as the actual support in wheat, that 370, 375 area that Aaron's talking about seems very technically appropriate. That would put you down below 350 for fall delivery corn. I would think at that point in time you factored in a pretty big fat carryover level and pretty weak demand. As far as beans go, unless you have super ideal weather, and say you did have super ideal weather, another 50 cents down in beans could be seen to where you're testing that 10-15, 10-25 area.
Bill Gentry, your broad perspective?
I think we're hitting it on all eights. I think a pro below 350 basis December corn is definitely in the works. I know technically the real strong support is a fair bit lower than that, but as far as fair value goes, it's in the hunt. Beans, you know, the $10 mark is probably really good shooting. 980 is a talking point for several people, but in realistic terms, we're going to have to basically do it a day or a week at a time. I think the way we get through harvest, chew through harvest, is also going to be pretty significant as far as how low these markets really want to track.
Let's bring Brian Bastien of Advanced Trading into the conversation. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. Brian, thanks for being with us this afternoon, too. We do appreciate that.
Pleasure to be with you, Todd. I would concur with the guys. I think we're looking at a market that's trying to do two different things now. It's trying to search out demand, uncover some demand from either the domestic side here, the feeder, or the export market. And at some point, it may be trying to discourage some South American acreage as we move forward in this August, September, October, November time period. But in terms of price prospects, I think look at equilibrium level for December corn down there at that 360 to 365 level perhaps later this fall. I would hope that November beans could hold at $10. I'm concerned because of the SEP 1 supplies of South American soybeans are up substantially, about 9 million tons from last year. So we've gotten accustomed to a very strong soybean export program in the fall the last several years, and I'm concerned that that could be in jeopardy this year.
On either crop, corn or soybeans, or wheat if you would prefer, producers are looking at much lower prices. For corn and soybeans, they're probably thinking, especially for corn, about a whole lot more bushels than maybe they thought about earlier in the year. But when they do the multiplication, it won't make for more money in their back pocket. What kinds of things should they be doing to protect income, do you suppose?
One thing that I've picked up just the last 2 weeks here, Todd, I'll share that I'm sure that a number of your listeners have also started to pick it up, is that producers are now looking more closely than they were perhaps a month or 6 weeks ago at applying fungicides to the crop just to try and boost or secure the volume, the tremendous looking crop they have in the field. They feel that it's worth the investment to do that, to secure those bushels and perhaps maybe add to what is already a tremendous looking crop. So, from a standpoint of revenue, that may be one avenue that folks are really starting to consider here, given the collapse in price that we've seen last month here.
Bill Gentry, do you have a question for Brian?
Yeah, I'd say looking at the basis patterns that we saw 3 to 5 years ago, and we're seeing a more normalized pattern and probably expect a transition in that direction, what kind of congestion do you see as far as the Western Corn Belt and the availability of rail cars and the storage situation out there?
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very delicate situation. We're already hearing talk of some substantial charges being applied to those rail facilities out west. I think it's going to be so much different from 2013 in this respect, whether you're in the Western Corn Belt, Central Corn Belt, or Eastern Corn Belt. The entire country elevator system, for all intents and purposes, was empty in 2013, about the 15th of September. And had to refill, and that took some time to do last fall. The challenge this year is, yeah, we're going to be tight on soybean stocks, but we're still going to have a little more soybeans than we did a year ago. And I think we're going to have a lot more corn, like 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 carry out, whatever it ends up being. So that's going to challenge all those transportation logistics here as we look forward. I think it's going to be, it could be really be a challenge, particularly as you say out west, moving forward as you get into harvest, especially this fall.
Mike Zuzulo?
Brian, you've been in this business a long time. For corn in particular, is there a model year or a similar year you can remember where you slipped below the $4 handle right after July 4th? And, you know, what does that say to us as we get into the combines?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike. I think you're just looking at each year has its own personality. This one is building in tremendous yield potential. On the 11th of July, it's certainly possible to see that. I think that the market will go lower than people think, is what I think is going to happen in the next 30 to 45 days. And then we'll see how strong the demand is. I think we'll see how strong the end user is willing to step up after having been behind the eight ball basically for about 3 years. 3 to 4 years, the end user has been behind the eight ball. They're kind of in the driver's seat now, and they feel like they can be a little more patient. And we're going to see how aggressive they do get. But that's my thought, I guess, moving forward here, is that markets have a way of surprising us to the upside and the downside. And if I were thinking today, I think that it could surprise us to the downside. Having said that, I hope we can uncover some good export demand and domestic demand should that occur.
Brian, were you able to hear Aaron Curtis during the program?
Yes.
Okay. Aaron, your question, please.
Brian, as we move towards the harvest here, as we talked about some of the potential here, we also have some producers out there hanging on to some old crop corn, and that window is kind of shrinking here between now and harvest. I guess my opinion is, what is your read on how much old crop corn is still out in producers' hands, and what kind of market impact do you think that could still hold here as we try to figure out how to get that moved here ahead of what looks like to be a large harvest heading this way?
It's a good question, Aaron. I think that as we look at the last 45 days of this crop year, that percentage is higher than normal still being held by producers. I would guess that, surprisingly, it could be as high as 15%. I would say maybe between 10 to 15% of the 2013 crop is still in producers' hands. I think that corn could be held till the bitter end. In many cases, producers' cash flow situation in general is in pretty good position. As you commented quite accurately earlier, the market is quite oversold, so they feel like you're going to get a rebound at some point. I think from a marketing standpoint, there is a point here where you just let it go and turn your focus to new crop. But in terms of what impact that may be, if they do hold it to the bitter end, for lack of a better phrase, then you're looking at, if we get into a period here where they get a little flush, if you will, of corn in that mid-August time period, you almost get a small harvest ahead of the harvest. Obviously, you're not looking at anything comparable to the size of the 14 crop, but that could have some impacts. And again, the thing I'd emphasize to everyone listening is that 14 looks much different than 13. We are not going to go into this harvest empty, and that would only add to the fact that a pipeline that's not empty this year, it would look a lot different in terms of impacts on things such as basis and transportation going into harvest.
We're talking with Brian Basting. He is with, of course, Advanced Trading out of Bloomington, Illinois. Also along with us today, Aaron Curtis of Midco and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. Mike Zuzulo of Global Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll be back in just about 1 minute here. Just a reminder that you can find us online if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. We post it all in its entirety so you can listen to it each and every day of the week. The times posted on our website are actually the times that those programs are posted to the website, so they're usually about 5 after the hour. If you want to visit there, willag.org. And one other reminder, you can find us on Twitter as well. My handle is @CommodityWeek, your director of agricultural programming here at WILL. The home station for Commodity Week is @DavidADickey. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now here's Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with an update of this week's weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for July so far is 71 degrees, about 4 degrees below average. The statewide average rainfall is 1.4 inches and 30% above average for this part of July. Amounts of 2 to 4 inches or more were common in the northern half of the state. Meanwhile, amounts were closer to an inch or less in the southern half of the state. With the cooler and wetter weather, soil moisture remains high in much of northern and central Illinois and a little drier in southern Illinois. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicates warm weather this weekend before cooling off next week. Highs on Saturday and Sunday will range from the low 80s in northern Illinois to the low 90s in southern Illinois. More rain is expected over the weekend. Rainfall amounts will be heaviest in northern Illinois with a potential of 2 to 3 inches, while an inch or less is expected in central and southern Illinois. Monday through Thursday will be cooler with highs in the upper 60s and low 70s in northern Illinois and the upper 70s and low 80s in southern Illinois. Overnight lows will get down into the 50s in northern and central Illinois and close to 60 in southern Illinois. Things will start to warm up again by next weekend. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks, of course, go to Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the weekly weather forecast. Now, here are the way the numbers settled for the week in Chicago at the CME Group. Friday to Friday changes. The high for the corn this week at $4.13¼. The overall low at $3.94. The trading week session settlement price at $3.99¾, down 17¼ cents in the July corn from the previous week. It and the December corn contract both gapped lower on the week. December at $3.84¾, down 30½ cents. Soybeans traded to a high of $11.86 in the July contract, the low at $12.49¼. Settlement price there at $12.94¾. July futures down 92 cents. November bean futures gapped weekly lower at about just half a cent, $10.75 in the November contract. The settlement price down 58½ cents. July soybean meal at $4.21.80, down $25.20. July bean oil at $36.71, finished $1.85 lower. Soft red winter wheat in the July or harvest month contract down 53¼ cents from the previous Friday settlement at $5.14¾ per bushel, and the July hard red at $6.34½, finished 62¾ lower than it did on the previous Friday. Outside down was posted in the live cattle futures. August contract, it finished at $149.12½ for the week, off $5.87½. The August feeders at $210.37½ per 100 pounds, finished $7.25 lower, and lean hogs in the August at $128.67½. Down $2.92½. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report, actually Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. This is the July 11th edition. We're talking with Advanced Trading's Brian Bastien. I'm wondering, Brian, you said this year is not like last year when we came into the harvest with nothing in the bin. But will it be like this past year once we get to the spring of 2015? And I'm thinking that demand was strong and we pushed prices into the $5 level earlier in the year. Could we not, and I'm not suggesting $5 level, but might we find a nice bounce sometime in January, February, March next year?
Yeah, Todd, I think moving forward, we have to look at the other factors once we get this crop tucked away this fall. The biggest factor on the heels of that will be, of course, South American weather. We've seen that competition from Brazil and Argentina ramp up exponentially here the last 3-4 years in terms of the export market. So if we were to get into any type of weather problem with Brazil and or Argentina, you know, get into that December, January, February time period, definitely that would be something that would be supportive of a good post-harvest rebound, as you highlight there. So that'd be a first item I'd highlight. The second item is how quickly the feed sector heals up. I think when you look at the sectors now, the cattle sector, the hog sector, the poultry sector, the milk folks, Those are folks that obviously are feeling much better about things now than they have been the last few years. If they were able to start to chew through this crop, that would also give us a good foundation for recovery. But, you know, when you start to look at the potential for a 14 billion bushel crop, maybe 14.2, 14.3, whatever it could be, no one knows, of course, but that's a lot of corn to chew through. So I think we have to be cognizant of that moving forward. But there are some things, as I mentioned, with South America and demand base that would hopefully support a rebound from a producer standpoint at some point.
Bill Gentry, one more question and a short answer.
I guess the bottom line is looking at the South American production with the prices being lower like they are, what would your expectations in their acreage shift or their acreage mix be?
I think we're going to see maybe a 2 to 3% increase in Brazil soybean acres versus like 8% last year. I think it is going to back them off a bit. They've had a lot of success with growing corn. I'm not sure they're going to back off a lot on corn, but I think we are going to see the growth in soybean acreage decline, and particularly in Brazil.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Brian. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity, Todd. Good to be with you guys.
Good to be with you, too. Brian Bastien is with Advanced Trading. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Let's get a final word from our panelists that are on the phone line with us. We'll start with Aaron Curtis. He's from Midco in Bloomington.
Like I said earlier, kind of keep an eye on this fund position in corn. Maybe it gets a little hint of maybe when this market wants to start continue to go lower or not. But it looks like we could have some continued weakness here in the near term, at least on corn side.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Yeah, I think we need to realize both corn and beans both still have some downside potential, and we need to be protecting that, not just rest on our crop insurance, because our crop insurance really isn't a marketing tool, it's a revenue tool.
And Mike Zuzlo with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
Well, let's see if the U.S. weather, the Indian weather, and the oversold technicals can open up the upside a little bit. Let's watch those gaps in Dease corn of 414 and in Nove beans 1129.5.
Thank you so much to everybody for joining us here on Commodity Week. Again, you can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming. Look for us on Twitter, too, at Commodity Week or at David A. Dickey. You have a great weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.